All right, welcome to another episode of Comedy Roundtable. You know, Adam, our guest tonight is flat out legit.
Okay.
Oh, I'm supposed to say, I'm sorry, this is Comedy Roundtable, Jamie, and Adam.
That's right.
There we go.
Okay. Usually there's a big, long, extended Hague.
Not with me, though.
Okay.
So our guest is an award-winning actor, writer, and producer. He's been praised as an impeccable chameleon character actor who's barely recognizable from role to role. You have seen him in major blockbuster movies such as Lethal Weapon, Independence Day, and Best in Show, and on the small screen in ER, Friends, The Drew Carey Show, Monk, Law and Order, 2.5 Men, Lost, and it goes on and on.
Wow, awesome.
And if his endless list of movies and TV credits wasn't enough, our guest is also an accomplished stage actor with many Broadway shows under his belt. His new book, Caught With My Pants Down and Other Tales from a Life in Hollywood, will be released on March 23rd, 2022. Please welcome Jim Piddick.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. Well, thank you very much. It's been lovely. Another time, perhaps.
It's very impressive. That's quite a long list.
After that intro, there's no time left for the show.
No.
So Jim, let's start with the book. So first of all, I imagine you're doing a series of interviews about the book. And how often are you asked whether or not you're wearing pants?
A couple of times, yeah. And the answer is no, I'm not.
Good. Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of an obvious answer.
It's the new Zoom. It's what I call business casual these days.
Absolutely. Zoom casual.
That's right. Zoom casual. Use usually some kind of button-up shirt as well as sweatpants at the most down low.
Yeah. It's a desktop commando.
That's right.
So tell us about the book.
It's brilliant. Thank you very much. it's a fun read, I think. It's had a lot of wonderful celebrity endorsements. I think it's it was always intended to be a romp through, an irreverent romp through my 4 decades in show business, but really as much about the observed as the observer, because nobody really cares about the Jim Piddick story. I don't even care about the Jim Piddick story as such, but I think some of the stories are fun.
So have you kept a notebook all through the years? Has something happened, you thought, okay, someday I'm going to write a book and that needs to be chapter 7?
No, not really. No, I've written down things, amusing stuff, but it all came back, you know, the more as that's the thing about when you do, I do tell it in a linear way, basically through my life and career. And then you just go, oh, yeah, and then that was, and then I remember that. And so the actual what and where is unimportant. It's the story behind it and the people. And generally, I'm quite nice to people. I'm honest to a fault, and I can be because I'm in my mid-60s. If I was in my mid-20s, I wouldn't be. I would be saying I can't say this because I'll have no career. But in fact, I would have had nothing to say in my mid-20s. So the point is really that I'm generally quite nice about people. There's a few people that confused me, and I say that, and I don't leave it like they're terrible people or whatever. They just behaved in this way. And then there's 3 people I absolutely eviscerate, and I enjoyed eviscerating them. I gutted them. Scorched earth territory, and 2 of them are alive and very well known, and 1 is dead, so they can't sue me.
And with those 3 people, did they know, based on your relationship, if they picked up your book, that they were probably going to get eviscerated?
Well, 1 of them is dead.
Yeah.
One of them's dead, so they would have trouble picking up the book.
Yeah.
They might do.
They're not going to be surprised.
They might not be surprised. I think 1 of them will be extremely surprised.
Okay.
And the other would not.
Oh, so someone is so unself-aware that they're going to actually be surprised that someone dislikes them.
Well, it was sort of a fleeting kind of encounter, but it was so appalling that it made the book. And it's not entirely surprising when you find out who it is. And the other one is just someone truly horrendous. I wrote, it's a whole chapter. Basically, the premise is here are 10 A-list actors that I've worked with. 9 I really loved, and 1 was a 4 asterisk expletive.
Are you looking forward to the reaction from the 2 living people that you eviscerated?
I don't care. I've no idea whether they'll ever read it or whether they'll, you know, be told about it.
Okay. And so the book's coming out on March 23rd. Any other projects that you're working on?
I got a film that's supposed to start shooting in England in the next 2 to 3 months. It's something I wrote, which Jeremy Irons is going to star in. And I am supposed to play a cameo in it. And I'm also producing it. It's actually a drama. Nothing funny about it at all. It's about a racehorse, a very famous racehorse. And it's kind of an English Seabiscuit story.
Excellent.
So we have 3 categories for you this evening to choose from.
Yep.
And they are When Animals Attack, Lethal mm-hmm. Weapons, and In the Beginning There Was. So for our first segment, which of those three would you like to choose?
And I have to answer questions about them.
You do. And there are severe penalties for incorrect answers.
When Animals Attack, I think, sounds like the most silly.
All right. So a practice question to just get you oriented and ready. Would you like us to go clockwise or counterclockwise?
Well, you're all in a line, so
he figured us out. Really,
this is the very first time of all of the episodes we've done. No one has noted that we're in a line.
Yeah.
So if you want me to go from left to right, if not right to left, I don't give a fuck.
Okay. All right. I think that's counterclockwise.
Yes. So I think what we should do is maybe start all right, in the middle.
Yeah, we'll start in the middle with Adam.
All right. When Animals Attack. So of the handlers, you know, animal handlers of lions, tigers, snakes, alligators, what is the most idiotic handler? Like, which animals should we just not handle? And it's just idiotic that people are doing this.
Well, I wouldn't handle ants. That's ridiculous to handle ants. I mean, why would you handle an ant? You don't need a wrangler for ants.
The ant handling industry is way overdone.
Yes, yeah. Speaking from experience, I did a commercial once with a bunch of penguins, and I had to kind of do this scene with them all walking around me. And I would say it's not that they don't need them, but I would not recommend that job to any living person because those bastards smell disgusting. Mm. They are as cute as hell. You want to pick them up and cuddle them and do all sorts of things with them, but they smell appalling.
That's why they don't let you close to them at the zoo.
That's why they wear the tuxedos so that you just have that
you
perception.
Gloss over it. Right. Oh, they're classy. They must not smell.
Right.
Now, and penguin odor isn't a subject that comes up at dinner parties very often. I mean, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Not the dinner parties I go to anyway.
I'm keeping it as like a personal conversational grenade.
Yeah.
For when it's going terribly poorly, I'm just going to say, I bet you didn't know how awful penguins smell.
Well, it's quite a good pickup line, really. You know, you just go into a bar and you see someone you fancy and you say, did you know that penguins smell like, and then you can use the comparison of whatever it is.
I don't want to give away any secrets from the book, but is one of the penguins one of the two that you eviscerate?
No. The penguins were lovely to work with, and I never saw them again.
Oh, okay.
All right, so what seemingly innocent creature frightens you to the point that if you were attacked by merely one, you would quickly wave the white flag?
I think is it koala bears? Is it koalas? No, I think koalas are quite passive. There is, what's the other cute kind
of panda?
Panda. The panda apparently is a vicious little fucker.
Oh.
I think I heard the story about someone at a zoo. They got a private tour of the zoo, and the zookeeper came up and said, do you want to know a secret about animals? Yeah, all right. He said, well, you know, you think the tiger might be something that we'd be scared of as zookeepers, but no, the tiger's all right compared to pandas. They're horrible little fuckers. And this is apparently coming from the horse's mouth, but not the horse's mouth. That would be really strange.
That would be awesome.
It was actually a zookeeper. That would be a really odd zoo.
You got to wonder if maybe the zookeeper was just jealous. Right, he's like, I've been running this zoo. This stupid panda gets all the attention. They get all the press. I'm just going to badmouth pandas now.
Well, I think it was. I think it was.
Slam.
Yeah.
Is it also possible that there was just a real ass of a panda at that particular zoo?
Yeah, I can't imagine. I think he was just
pandas jealous. Pandas have a notoriously cantankerous reputation.
Is that right? So yeah. you're backing me up on this.
I didn't make
that up.
No, it is true.
Okay.
My turn. Okay, so When Animals Attack is the... I'm going to go a little bit in the opposite direction. Is there an animal for which you are a whisperer?
I actually... Animals are attracted to me, and I don't know why. They always come straight for me, and they're not always welcome. About 4 years ago, we had these two hummingbirds right by our front door that made a nest while we were away, and we came back. And there were these two tiny, I mean, hummingbirds are small anyway. These babies were sort of being raised there by their mum. And I used to pass by them every day, you know, and look at them and see how they're growing. And then one day, and the mother was really upset because one of them had fallen out. Oh. And so I didn't know what to do. And I did the Google thing and was like, because I heard you can't pick up birds because once you've done that, their mother rejects them if they've had human touch. And I looked it up and it said, that's not true of hummingbirds. So I picked the hummingbird up, put it back in its nest. The mother went furious, was buzzing me and just coming after me.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would talk to them every day, these two birds. And then they finally left the nest. And one of them I'd named them after famous British comedians, Morecambe and Wise. And one of them was Morecambe, one of them was Wise. And the one that I think I picked up was called Morecambe. And so they got used to my voice. And after they left the nest, I called out the name, Morecambe. And I swear to God, this bird came from tree a long way away, came straight down to where it used to be in the nest and started buzzing around me.
Come on.
And then it settled on a little vine, and I would sort of chatter to it and chatter back, and then it would head off. And I thought, this is too weird. And every time I went outside, I would call and it would come.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Would the sound then of your voice, I guess, would be your call to that bird?
Yeah.
Right?
It had to be.
The melody of your voice, whatever that is.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
That's like a mother, you know, but it makes sense that as a youth, he heard this sound a lot, right? As the baby bird heard that sound a lot growing up, because you're always calling him by it, that he would then say, okay, that's something to return to.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for the first segment of Comedy Roundtable with our guest, Jim Pittock. We'll be back momentarily. So I have heard that people who have gone to Antarctica and worked directly with penguins do complain about the horrendous smell, because it's bad enough when you're shooting a commercial with a few penguins around you. But apparently when you are in a place like Antarctica and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of penguins around, it is almost impossible to bear the smell.
Okay, so that's where you're wrong, and here's why.
Boom, drop the knowledge.
Nothing smells in the cold. Nothing smells in the cold. There is no odor in space. It's so cold, nothing smells in space. And the same thing is true in Antarctica. And by the way, what a more obnoxious humble brag than to be like, so listen, when I was in Antarctica.
Right, I hung out.
It was amazing.
Let me tell you, these penguins,
but first of all, the penguins reek.
Right. You don't think it's your astronaut helmet in space that's preventing you from smelling space?
No, you probably smell that horrible breeze-dried everything bagel that you had before you went out on the spacewalk.
Of course things smell in the cold.
When was the last time you smelled a bad odor in the cold?
So if you walk out on any cold day, you can smell somebody's fire going.
That's a good odor.
Oh,
so you can smell things. You just can't smell bad things.
That's what I'm saying. Bad things don't smell in the cold.
Bad things don't like the cold. They stay inside.
Okay, so listen. If you could smell in the cold, wouldn't they find dead bodies?
This is an interesting point. That's probably why they can't find dead bodies.
Right.
Because they don't smell.
And they don't smell.
So this is why penguins are always in cold environments. Because they know they smell so bad. They have to just get there.
Isolated themselves in a way where they could have their dinner parties in peace.
It's evolution, baby.
Yeah.
The penguins had to go where it was cold.
Yeah, the predators.
To cover the smell.
The predators could, as soon as they figure out how that to either fly or stop swimming where sharks are, they'll take over the planet.
And this is why penguins are ultimately concerned about climate change.
Oh, yeah.
It won't be because of they've lost their habitat. It's because
people will know the gig is up.
Could you imagine penguin morning breath?
I think walrus morning breath can't be great.
Oh, that's also bad.
Right?
But they're also down there.
Because
same
they're
principle.
Like, we stink.
We're
smell
awful.
This breath.
I can't even brush this two giant teeth.
This is enormous.
Do you know how much dried herring is on these tusks?
Do you think as animals migrate to colder areas, the animals are like, how bad does he smell? Yeah, keep going. Keep going.
Further south.
You got to go all the way to the tip.
Further south.
All right, welcome back to Comedy Roundtable with our guest, Jim Pittock. Jim, we've got two categories left, Lethal Weapons, and In the Beginning There Was.
Oh, we have to do all three?
Yes.
I thought I got a choice.
Well, there is a choice.
It's
a choice of order.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I thought I'd get three new ones.
Yeah.
And I was so excited by that, but now I'm just
disappointed.
I've lost the will to live now. Let's go with Lethal Weapons, given that my first ever movie was Lethal Weapon 2.
If you were attempting to kill someone and you had to get away with it, what's the right way to do that?
Do you want a method of killing someone?
Yeah, if you would, please.
Well, if you got a very, very pointy kind of mold and filled it with water.
Okay.
And so you made this ice, essentially an ice.
Ooh, brilliant.
A pointy thing that was sharp enough to stab someone with. Then you'd stab them with that and then it would melt, so there would be no evidence.
That is brilliant.
There'd just be a little pool of water, and they went, oh, they pissed themselves when they died.
And there's no possibility of ever finding a murder weapon.
I don't think you can get fingerprints off of water.
No, That's brilliant.
No, I mean, your DNA could be in the water, but, you know, let's worry about that when we get to it. And, and we'll let the my defending lawyer figure that out.
I wonder why there are not more icicle murders, or maybe there are, and we're just not catching them.
Well, now there's going to be a whole spate of them. Yeah, I mean, New York will be inundated.
You're a supporter of Crystal Palace. Is that right?
Correct. I am. I'm a fanatic, yes.
Okay, so Chelsea loaned Conor Gallagher to Crystal Palace, and he has proven to be quite the lethal weapon. Another Conor of the McGregor variety announced his intention to purchase Chelsea, which was put up for sale. How do you feel about Conor McGregor potentially being an owner in the Premier League?
I hadn't heard that. Now, just forgive my ignorance. Is Conor McGregor a boxer?
Yeah, he is a
MMA.
Yeah, he's a UFC fighter. Boxer, UFC fighter.
Same sort of thing. Idiots smashing each other around. Right. Okay. I don't care. I'd much rather that than a Russian oligarch or someone who's made money from oil, blood money. I mean, yeah, I much prefer that. Presumably it's a consortium of people. It's a lot of money. Chelsea's a very, very, very expensive club to buy.
All right. So you have had an extraordinary collection of actors that you've worked with over the course of your career.
Yes.
And there is the phrase, kill them with kindness when in a dispute with somebody. Among your many acting partners over the years, with whom did you have to deploy such a tactic?
Kill them with kindness because they were being so difficult.
Right.
Just in a circumstance where you had conflict of some kind, and that was maybe your strategy to try to resolve whatever the conflict was.
I that wouldn't be my strategy, by the way. The one person is in the book that I talk about who was beyond difficult. It wasn't killing them with kindness. It was killing them by running away and hiding from them. I'm a coward, a born coward. So, God, I'm trying to think who has been really difficult and I've been really nice to. I mean, people like Fred Willard were so lovely that you never had a moment where it wasn't a delight to be with him. I would say, and this is in the book a little bit, I think Craig T. Nelson. I did couple of episodes early in my career on a show called Coach. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people know who he is. I don't know a lot about him. And he seems like a very good actor. And I did two episodes. And he was just very strange. You sort of felt he was quite nice to me, but he was always at loggerheads with the producers and director and writer. And it felt like everyone was walking on eggshells. So I was always very nice because I thought this could get ugly if I wasn't.
Right.
And the second episode I did was weird because he and his co-star was Jerry Van Dyke, Dick Van Dyke's brother.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I had all my scenes with them and they didn't need, and I'd done the show already. So the writers and producers were really friendly and loved me. The supporting cast couldn't have been nicer. And these two guys, I spent the entire week with them rehearsing up till taping day on Friday, and neither of them said a single word to me in the entire week. Oh. And that's really hard to do.
Impossible to do almost.
Well, we were in the green room for hours. We were rehearsing for hours. And so they talked to me in the scene, obviously, but they didn't talk to me once. And I thought, this is really odd.
When you're a few days into that with no communication, do you then just try to see how far you can stretch it out?
I didn't have to make any effort at all. I just was I just got to the end of the week. I'm like, oh my God, neither one has said a single word. It was amazing. That's quite an achievement. It's like the other day I went for a walk and the guy I'd never seen before comes up and he's walking beside me in the hills here in Hollywood. He's a big guy about my age, you know, baseball cap and whatever, and shorts and t-shirt like me. And I gave him a big smile and said, hey, how are you? And hi. And he just looked straight at me and then looked away.
Oh.
And continued walking. And I thought, that's really hard to do. That's just the human reaction to almost anybody. And try it sometime. It's kind of fun. Walking down a street, although in New York, it might be different. And you sort of smile at people and nod, and they'll almost always smile back. Almost always. Even if you say hello to a stranger, you go, hi. And they kind of think, oh, he must know me. And they go, hi, or whatever.
Right.
But to actually just look someone straight in the eye, I laughed because that sort of stuff makes me laugh. It's so bizarre.
It is so bizarre that you'd make, because that is the more conscious. It's almost the unconscious reaction is to nod your head or give a smile or something.
Of course. I mean, look at a baby. You smile at a baby, and 9 times out of 10, when they get to a certain age, they'll smile back.
Yeah.
Right. He took the effort of acknowledging your greeting, but not acknowledging it in any kind of normal way.
And if I don't want to say something to somebody, I don't make direct eye contact with them.
Right. I just kind of say, oh, I didn't hear you, or just keep walking, and or, you know, even even a past you go to hell. But, you know, to stop and to look at you and then say nothing.
Exactly. I mean, if you didn't hear me, he's wearing earphones or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That's almost sociopathic to me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right. With that, we will wrap up segment 2 of Comedy Roundtable. We will be back with Jim Pittock in just a moment. All right, so here we are in the midst of Lent. Adam, how did you celebrate Mardi Gras this year?
I thought Mardi Gras came after Lent, and so completely missed it. So are you telling me like Fat Tuesday's already happened?
So someone sold you a condo. They rented you a condo at a great discount right after Lent.
What am I going to do with all these beads?
So were you really excited when you saw that it was easy to get a dining reservation in New Orleans around the time?
Oh, ecstatic. I thought I was crushing it.
Buying tickets at the movie theater.
Oh, my God.
Perfect seats available.
There. Let's go back to the guest.
We are back with Comedy Roundtable. All right, so now you have the choice to choose between the following categories. In the beginning, there was...
Well, there's no choice. I've already chosen to.
Indeed. Yep. Indeed, you are correct. There's no choice. And in fact, there's no choice with who's going to start with the questioning. It's going to be me. And my question for you is, have you ever looked at a food or a fruit and said, who was the first person to eat this? And what were they thinking?
Yeah, pineapple. I mean, not an obvious choice. That's like going walking past a cactus and saying, I'm going to put that in my mouth and see what happens. You know, it's I mean, talk about lethal weapon. You'd use it as a weapon more than a food substance.
Exactly.
Can you imagine the surprise, though, for the guy who tried that first pineapple?
Yeah, absolutely. God, there's certain foods you look at and you go, why? Why would anyone eat that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oysters, I think, would be in that category.
Oysters. Exactly. I mean, seriously, I can't stand the smell of truffles. I have a very strong sense of smell. And in a restaurant where there is truffle this and truffle that, it's fucking disgusting. Why would you eat a piece of mold under the ground? That's essentially what it is. It's a fungus under the ground. Now, you'll say, well, Jim, you eat mushrooms. And that's true. And I have no answer to that.
I want to see a short sketch of a penguin delivering truffles as the waiter in a restaurant to Jim.
It would be all over. That and vinegar. Vinegar's the other one. Why would you eat vinegar? It smells like something has rotted. It's disgusting. Then again, my hypocrisy comes through because I like cheese, which also can smell like something's rotting. So none of this makes any sense. I'm just telling you my predilection.
So you've had a long and celebrated career, but you actually got your start on the theater stage in plays such as the George C. Scott directed play Present Laughter, which I believe featured the Broadway debut of Nathan Lane.
Yep.
Who is the funniest stage actor with which you have had the chance to work?
Well, I can tell you the funniest person I've ever worked with, and it was on stage, so it does qualify, and he's the funniest person in real life, and that's Billy Connolly. That's an easy one. Billy Connolly is the funniest man I've ever met in my life, and I've met a lot of very funny people. He is at a dinner party. He starts a story, and you're going, please keep this going for the next 2 hours, and everybody else shut the hell up, because he is... intrinsically funny. He could just tell you about changing a light bulb and he'd make it funny. He could do anything. And he's a delight. The show I was in was called What About Dick? And how about this for a cast? It was Russell Brand, Billy Connolly, Tim Curry, Eric Idle, Eddie Izzard, Jane Leaves, myself, Tracy Ullman, and Sophie Winkleman. And actually, in the first version we did was Emily Mortimer. Those are all very, very talented, very, very funny people. And Billy stole the damn show with his performance. So as an actor, he can also be really funny. But he is, he's without question, the funniest person I've ever come across. And I haven't literally come across him, but you know what I mean.
Sure.
He's not that funny.
No.
All right. In the beginning, right? That's the framing of this question. What was the first thing that you remember where you felt, I have a need to be creative?
When I knew that I was so rubbish at football, I couldn't be a professional footballer. That was a moment where I think I was probably 14 or 15. And I went, there's a reality check here. I'm good enough to be captain of my school. And it's a small school. And I sort of suddenly saw the world as bigger than I thought it was. So that was the first moment. The second was I was bored at school, so I did a school play. And I remember standing in the wings. I was 15, my first ever entrance in any play. And I remember feeling simultaneously absolutely terrified and high as a kite on adrenaline. And I remember thinking, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life.
I think that's an incredibly gifted life where you have two careers that you basically, you know, have explored. One being professional footballer. That didn't work out. I'm going to try acting is it. Acting, it turns out your acting, second swing yes. was the home run.
Yeah. And then my dad's insistent that I go to university to have a plan B. And I did English at university, probably gave me my plan B of being a writer. Mm-hmm. So thanks to him for that.
So let me ask then the opposite end of that. Not in the beginning, but in the end.
In the end.
What is the last thing that you want to be doing? Is it, do you want to be producing? Is it, do you want to be writing? Is it, do you want to be acting? What's the one that you, if everything goes well, the one that you'll hold on to the last is which?
Well, that's it. Again, an easy one. People say, would you prefer acting or writing? And if someone held a gun to my head, I would say acting, for the simple reason it was my first love. It's infinitely easier. It's I show up now for acting. I mean, stage work is very different. That was hard work. Mm-hmm. And that was an enormous amount of energy. But doing TV and film, it's a vacation for me, because writing is really quite difficult, and that's work. And so, but again, I got bored acting, just acting. That's why I went to writing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, without question, I would, if someone said, you've got to give it all up except one of them, it would be everything else can go. And I just want to act.
All right, well, Jim, thank you for joining us on Comedy Roundtable. Where would people find you if they're looking for you online?
They would find me at www.jimpiddock.com. The book is called Caught With My Pants Down and Other Tales from a Life in Hollywood. So that's where you'd find me. And then you'll find me probably whenever you turn your TV on and see reruns of something or even something new coming up.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. And this has been a real treat, because I've certainly enjoyed watching it on screen for many, many years, and I admire what you do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
For Jamie, and Adam, this has been another episode of the Comedy Roundtable. You know where to find us.